Okay, so we're diving deep today into a case that really gets at the heart of some pretty fundamental legal concepts, things like due process and fairness in the courts.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about those concepts, you can't really avoid this idea of res judicata.
Right, res judicata for our little listeners out there, it's often called claim preclusion. And it basically means you can't keep relitigating the same issues over and over again once a final judgment has been made.
Exactly. And the case we're looking at today, Gonzalez versus Bunco Central Corp, this case from the First Circuit back in the 80s, it really digs into some of the nuances and potential pitfalls of res judicata when you have these situations where there are multiple groups of plaintiffs with very similar claims.
Yeah, and I think what makes this case particularly interesting is that it doesn't involve, like a class action lawsuit or anything where you have a defined group representing everyone. It involves these two distinct sets of plaintiffs, the Rodriguez plaintiffs, who
Right.
file their lawsuit first and then later the Gonzalez plaintiffs.
And it's important to note that both groups of plaintiffs were alleging harm stemming from the same underlying issue, these purchases of swamp land in Florida back in the 70s.
Right, so same bad investment, different groups of people suing over it. And what's fascinating is that the Gonzalez group, they actually tried to join the Rodriguez lawsuit early on. They wanted to intervene and become parties to that case, but the court said no.
And that's critical detail because later, when the Gonzalez plaintiffs filed their own lawsuit, the defendants argued that they were barred by res judicata.
Yeah.
They said, look, this issue has already been decided in the Rodriguez case.
Right. And the court initially agreed with the defendants, which seems kind of crazy when you think about it, because the Gonzalez plaintiffs, they weren't allowed in the first case, and then they're told they're bound by the outcome of that case anyway. It's like being told you can't play in the game and then being told you lost anyway.
Yeah. It definitely seems counterintuitive, and that's where the First Circuit comes in. They ended up reversing that initial decision and said, hold on a second, res judicata doesn't apply here, and their reasoning gets to the core of what res judicata is really all about.
Okay, so for our listeners, let's break down res judicata a bit more. We know it prevents relitigation, but what are the specific elements that have to be present for it to apply?
So there are three main elements. First, you need a final judgment on the merits in a previous case. Then the current case has to involve the same cause of action or claim as the previous case. And finally, the parties in both cases have to be the same or in privity with each other.
Okay, so in Gonzalez, you had the first two elements, right? There was a final judgment in the Rodriguez case, and both cases were about the same swampland sales. But it was that third element, the privity part, that really caused all the trouble.
Exactly. Because the Gonzalez plaintiffs weren't named parties in the Rodriguez case, the question was, did they have this special relationship called privity with the Rodriguez plaintiffs that would legally bind them to the outcome of that case?
So privity basically means that even though you weren't technically a party to the case, you're so closely connected to a party that you're treated as if you were there yourself, right?
Right. And there are different ways privity can be established. Like if you have control over the litigation, even though you're not a named party, or if there's some kind of legal relationship that passes on the rights and obligations from one party to another.
And in Gonzalez, how were the defendants trying to argue that privity existed between these two groups of plaintiffs?
Well, they pointed to a few things. They said both groups had basically the same lawyers. They were making almost identical claims. And some of them were even pooling resources for litigation through this thing called the Sunrise Litigation Group.
Yeah.
So the defendants were saying, look, it's basically the same lawsuit, just with different names attached.
But the First Circuit wasn't buying it. They said, nope, that's not enough to establish privity. So what was their reasoning there? What did they say was missing?
Well, they emphasized that simply having the same lawyers or asserting similar claims isn't enough for privity. The Gonzalez plaintiffs didn't have any actual control over the Rodriguez litigation. They couldn't dictate legal strategy and make decisions about which arguments to emphasize or control the direction of that case. And the court was very hesitant to expand the definition of privity too broadly because they didn't want to create a situation where people could be bound by judgments in cases they had no real involvement in.
And that makes sense, especially in light of the fact that the Gonzalez plaintiffs, they actually tried to become part of the Rodriguez case and the court blocked them. So it seems pretty unfair to then turn around and say, well, you're still stuck with that result, even though we wouldn't let you participate.
Yeah, the First Circuit actually called that a procedural whipsaw, and they said it would be a huge due process problem to allow that to happen. Because remember, due process is all about fairness in legal proceedings, and it guarantees everyone the right to be heard.
So that denial of intervention was a big deal for the First Circuit. And they also shot down this idea that the Rodriguez plaintiffs were virtually representing the Gonzalez plaintiffs, even though they weren't official parties to the case.
Right. Virtual representation is this other legal concept that can sometimes bind non-parties to a judgment. But the court said it's a very limited doctrine, and it requires careful consideration of a bunch of factors, like whether the non-party knew about the first lawsuit, whether they consented to be represented by the parties in that case, and whether it would be fair to bind them to the outcome under the specific circumstances.
And in Gonzalez, doesn't seem like many of those factors were met, especially since the Gonzalez plaintiffs were explicitly denied the chance to participate in the Rodriguez case.
Exactly. And the court also looked at the Sunrise Litigation Group, you know, the group that both sets of plaintiffs were involved with. But they said just being a member of this group that shared some costs and information wasn't enough to establish the kind of control or legal relationship that's required for privity.
So basically, the First Circuit was saying, look, even though these two groups of plaintiffs were working together to some extent, they were still separate entities with their own rights. And it wouldn't be fair to treat them as a single unit for purposes of res judicata.
Right. And I think that's a key takeaway from this case. The First Circuit was very concerned about protecting the autonomy of individual plaintiffs and making sure that people aren't unfairly swept up in judgments just because they have similar claims to someone else.
So for our listeners out there who might be thinking about this in the context of their own legal studies or future practice, what's the big takeaway from Gonzalez? What should we remember about res judicata and how it applies in these kinds of situations?
Well, the main lesson here is that res judicata isn't a simple one-size-fits-all rule. It's a doctrine with limits. And those limits are especially important when we're talking about people who weren't actually parties to the original lawsuit. Just because two cases look similar on the surface doesn't automatically mean that everyone involved is going to be bound by the outcome of the first case.
And that goes back to those core ideas of due process and fairness that we were talking about earlier. You know, everyone deserves their day in court, and res judicata can't be used to silence people who have legitimate claims just because someone else with a similar claim has already gone through the legal system.
Absolutely. And I think Gonzalez is a great reminder that courts have to be very careful about applying res judicata in a way that respects those fundamental rights. It's a balancing act between ensuring efficiency in the courts and making sure that everyone has a fair chance to be heard.
It definitely is. And yeah. For all of our listeners out there, I think this case raises a really interesting question to ponder. You know, in a legal world that's often focused on efficiency and streamlining things, how do we make sure that those goals don't overshadow the individual rights of people who are seeking justice? It's a tension that the courts are constantly grappling with, and Gonzalez provides a great example of how those competing interests can play out in a real-world scenario.
And to really bring it home for our listeners, think about this. How would you feel if you were in the Gonzalez plaintiff's shoes? You know, you try to join a lawsuit, you're denied entry, and then you're told, well, tough luck. You're bound by the outcome anyway. It really makes you appreciate the importance of due process and the right to be heard.
Absolutely. It's a powerful reminder that the legal system has to be more than just efficient. It has to be fair as well.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up this deep dive into Gonzalez versus Bunco Central Core. So much to think about and unpack here. But hopefully this discussion has given our listeners a better understanding of res judicata due process and the challenges of balancing those concepts in a complex legal world.
I think so too. Thanks for having me.
And as always, thanks to our listeners for joining us. And be sure to tune in next time for another deep dive into the fascinating world of legal precedent.
See you next time.
Take care.